Hello, everybody. My name's Dave Mowitz. This is Bob Godbout. We're together. We are Stepwise Systems, we're both statisticians. Bob did the specifications for rugs and for the cause, and I did the specs for the data submission specs and for the Rug 3 crosswalk. So my sympathies, you get to listen for an hour and 45 minutes to two statisticians talking, so we'll try to make it relatively interesting. And we're going to be talking about, I'll be talking about section A and X, that's X-ray, and Bob will be talking about Z. So these are the three administrative sections of the MDS. To our way of thinking, they're the most interesting, so we'll cover those three, and then we'll let everybody else mop up the clinical details for the other 16 sections in the middle. So that'll take a couple of days, though. Okay, let me see if I can make this thing work. Okay. I'll be talking about the intent of Section A, describe the information required, and hopefully explain how to code it accurately. Section A is the identification section. It documents a variety of data, and the intent is to obtain key information that identifies the resident and the facility where the resident resides, and also to specify the reason for assessment and the type of provider, whether it's a swing bed or nursing home. The first set of items are A100 and A200, which contain facility data. These allow identification of the nursing home that's submitting the data, and you enter the numbers in the spaces that are provided. And you can see we've got the national provider ID. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, for my presentation and all the rest of them this week that are going to be going through section by section, if you haven't already discovered it in the packet you got, there is an MDS-3 with all the items on it, so you might want to pull that out if you haven't already and follow along. That might make it easier to follow some of the presentations. Okay, so in A100, we've got three items that we cover about the facility: the national provider ID, identification number, the CMS certification number, the CCN, which has previously been known as the Medicare ID, the facility Medicare ID, which is only currently it's only a six-character ID. We left extra spaces just in case. and then the state provider ID, which would be assigned by the state Medicaid agency. And all of these, the national provider ID is 10 characters long, and we allow 10 characters for that. But the CCN and the state provider number can be shorter than the number of spaces provided. So in that case, you would left justify those and leave the remaining spaces empty. There's a new item, A200, which specifies the type of provider, which can be either a nursing home or a swing bed provider. And this is a new item because for the first time, of course with MDS-2, we've had a separate flavor, essentially, of the MDS for nursing homes and for swing beds. And for MDS-3, we've decided to consolidate those into a single set of items. The requirements are for nursing homes that are Medicare or Medicaid certified must complete an MDS to meet their OBRA requirements. That's no change at all from before. And SNFs and swing bed providers need to complete assessments for SNF PPS. And both nursing homes and swing bed providers must complete item sets for every entry into the facility for the appropriate type of discharge, and then, of course, any intervening assessments that are required as well. The next set of items are A310 and A410, which indicate the type of assessment or the reasons for assessment. A310 identifies the information that's required to complete the type of assessment. Assessments can be completed for multiple reasons, just like on MDS-2. For example, you can combine OBRA and PPS assessments into a single assessment. And when you do combine assessments, you need to meet all the requirements for all, both of those, say if you're combining two types of assessments, you need to combine all the requirements for both types of assessment. And we've supplied item sets for the different types of assessment, the different item subsets we call them, or ISCs, item subsets. And those, if you look at each type, it shows all the items that are required for the various types of assessments. A310A is the federal OBRA reason for assessment item. This is comparable to AA8A on the MDS-2. And in fact, there haven't really been any changes. These, although they're reordered, I think, they are reordered. This is still the same types of assessments that you've been dealing with on MDS-2. So there's not a big change with A310A. There is one change, and Ellen alluded to this this morning about, and actually I'm not sure that this is a change, but in any event, there is a policy that when there's a hospice benefit is either opted in or opted out, that there's a requirement to do a significant change in status assessment. And that applies to, if the nursing home resident elects or revokes the Medicare hospice benefit, the nursing home is required to complete a significant change in status assessment. The hospice benefit doesn't need to be Medicare to require a significant change in status. And a significant change in status assessment is required every time the hospice benefit is elected or revoked. And this is true even if a recent MDS was already completed. And the purpose of this is to ensure coordination and communication between the nursing home and the hospice that's going to be providing the care. A310B is the PPS reasons for assessment. And this is comparable to AA8B today on MDS-2. And we've got the ones that you're used to. We've got the 5, 14, 30, 60, and 90-day, and the readmission return assessment, the PPS readmission return. We also have a new option for an unscheduled PPS assessment. And then there's a 99, which is when you use to indicate that it's not a PPS assessment. A310C is a new item that indicates whether the assessment is related to the start or end of therapy. And this item needs to be completed on every assessment. You can either indicate that no, it's not, and it's not an OMRA or other Medicaid-required assessment, or you can indicate that it's a start of therapy assessment, an end of therapy assessment, or both a start and end of therapy assessment. And if it's a start of therapy assessment, the ARD must be 5 to 7 days after the first day of therapy services. In other words, after the first therapy services begin. If it's code 2, an end of therapy, the ARD needs to be 1 to 3 days after the last day of therapy services were provided. And if it's a code 3, both start and end, then the ARD must be both of those criteria. There's an exception to this if it's a short stay assessment. And Ellen talked about that some this morning, and then I think on Friday when PPS policy is covered, I think that'll be covered in some more detail. A310D. Is an item that is also a new one. This is to indicate a swing bed clinical change assessment. And this is an item that's only active on if it's a swing bed provider, if A200 is a 2. Otherwise, nursing home assessments that skip over that item. A310E indicates that whether the current assessment being performed is the first assessment since the most recent admission. And Ellen mentioned this morning that we struggled a bit with the idea, with the definition of what an entry means versus an admission. And I think in retrospect we might have wished that we had said first assessment since most recent entry rather than admission. But that is the intent of the item in any event, is that this is supposed to indicate if this is the first assessment that's been completed since you completed the entry record for this person. So in other words, if a person newly comes in, they do an entry record, entry tracking record. Then the very next assessment, with a, be it a 5-day, an admission, or whatever, you would complete that assessment, and on this A310E, you would say, yes, it is the first assessment since the entry. And on every subsequent assessment, you would say no. And then you would continue on until they were discharged and came back in again, and then you would start over with a yes. And the purpose of this item, you'll see in some of the clinical sections, it serves as to trigger some skip patterns so that some items are asked only the first time after a person has entered the facility and not thereafter. So it's sort of to keep you from having to do an assessment item too frequently. A310F is the entry or discharge reporting item. This indicates there's five options here for whether it's an entry record, discharge return not anticipated, a discharge return anticipated, death in facility record, or it's not an entry or discharge record. So, the entry and the death in facility record are tracking forms only, no clinical items on those, they're very brief. And then the idea of doing clinical items on a discharge is a newer concept now with MDS3. AO410 designates the authority for submitting an assessment for this resident. And in order to for the assessment to be submitted to the ASAP system, and ASAP is the new system that's going to be accepting MDS3 data, in order for the data to be submitted, it has to either meet a state and or federal requirements. And this is similar, well actually it's identical to the item, it's not actually an item, but there is a piece of information that's submitted with the MDS2. It's not actually an item on the MDS2 form itself, but we refer to it as subrex, meaning submission requirement. And it's coded exactly the same way, and the rules are the same for this. And in thinking about it, it's almost easiest to think about it going backwards. The option number 3 indicates that it's a federally required submission. So if the resident is in a Medicare or Medicaid certified unit, then it's a federally required submission. If they're not in a Medicare or Medicaid certified unit, but they're in some other part of a nursing home and state licensure rules cover that person, then you may need to be submitting that assessment for state purposes, in which case you would indicate it too. And CMS then does not have authority to look at that, but the data will flow through to the state. And then if it meets neither of those requirements, you need to indicate a 1, that it's neither federal nor state required submission. If you indicate a 1, that record is not going to be accepted by the ASAP system. It's going to be kicked back out because neither the state nor CMS has authority to see that data, so it's going to be kicked out. And also I might mention now, we'll be talking later about corrections and inactivations, but if you inadvertently get this incorrect and you submit a record that then you realize, oh, it should have been a 1 because it shouldn't have been submitted in the first place, you can't just inactivate that. You actually need to contact your RAI coordinator, I think, and have that record manually deleted from the system because it shouldn't be there according to HIPAA laws. A500 and A2400 through A2400 indicates resident data. And of course, this is information that's needed to identify the resident you're completing the assessment for. A500 through 1300 contain personal data such as name and identification numbers. A1500 and 1550 contain the mental illness, mental retardation status items. A1600 through 2400 indicates the entry and discharge data, assessment reference date, and Medicare stay information. Starting with A500, the legal name of the resident. Enter the resident's name as it appears on the resident's Medicare card. That's true. If they're a Medicare resident, you should use the name that's as exactly as written on the Medicare card. If you have a resident who's not a Medicare resident, then you, a Medicare Benny, then you should fall back on some other government-issued identification, for example, Medicaid card, if they have one of those. If not, you might use driver's license, birth certificate, something government-issued. The idea is that we want some sort of a standardized name to make it easier to match up that person's information as it's submitted on various assessments. And you can see we've got, just like on MDS-2, we've got the first name, middle initial if they have one, last name, and they have to have a last name, and then a suffix. A600 is the Social Security and Medicare numbers. You can also use a comparable railroad insurance number if that applies to the person. Don't use an HMO number, enter one number per space, and leave blank if not available for the Social Security and Medicare numbers. And A700 is the Medicaid number, and this, of course, helps identify the resident also. And just like on MDS-2, we're using the same conventions where you put a plus sign in the first character to indicate that the Medicaid number is pending, and an N if it's not applicable. And we don't have an example there. One thing I did want to mention, if I can get back to that, on the Social Security and Medicare numbers, is that if the resident is a PPS resident, a Medicare resident, they have to have, you have to enter at least one of those, either the Medicare or the Social Security number or the record. I believe that's a rejection. I think the record will be rejected unless you have one or at least one of those. You can put both in if you want. Gender, that's pretty straightforward. And this is supposed to match up with the gender as indicated in the Social Security system. Birth date. This works just like the birth date item on MDS-2. You use zeros to pad any of the numbers. So, for example, in that example there, like month one, January, is indicated as 01. You provide the complete birth date if that's known, and leave any unknown components blank. So, for example, if all you know is the year, then you leave the month and the day blank and indicate the year. So in this particular example here, you just enter blanks for month, blanks for day, and then enter 1918. And if you knew the month but not the day and the year, then that month and the year but not the day, then you would say 01 for month, blank blank for day, and 1918 for the year. Works just like MDS-2. Race, ethnicity. The categories follow the common uniform language. I believe this is mandated now by the OMB. And they're not used to determine any eligibility for participation in any federal program. One thing that's left off of this slide is that it's the race ethnicity item has changed from MDS-2. On MDS-2, you can only indicate one race or racial or ethnic group. MDS-3, it follows the newer convention where you can indicate multiple racial or ethnic categories if appropriate. A1100 is the language item and indicates whether or not the resident needs an interpreter. And the reason that this is important is the inability to make needs known and to engage in social interaction because of a language barrier, of course, causes problems for the resident. It can be frustrating and can lead to isolation and depression. And language barriers can also interfere with completing an accurate assessment, especially now that we have the interview sections on the MDS. It's the need for an interpreter can be even more acute. And it also ability to communicate or not have language barriers is necessary for the consent process as well. Okay. So the purpose of A1100 is to determine if an interpreter is needed. You ask the resident if he or she needs or wants an interpreter. If they can't answer, then you try to consult a family member or a significant other. Or you review the medical record if there's no other source of information available. You ask for the preferred language if needed. And a family member or significant other can be used as an interpreter if the resident is comfortable with this, and that person will translate exactly what the resident says without providing their own interpretation. Ascertaining all this may be complex in some cases, but coding the item is pretty straightforward. It's just a 0, 1, or 9. 0 meaning that an interpreter is not wanted or needed, a 1 that the interpreter is wanted or is wanted or needed, or a 9 that you're unable to determine. And if you indicate that an interpreter is needed, then you should complete A1100B, where you actually indicate what preferred language is needed. And there was one note about this, that an organized system of signing, such as American Sign Language, can be reported as the preferred language if the resident needs or wants to communicate that way. A1200 is a fairly straightforward one. That's just marital status. I don't think that's changed since MDS2. A1300 has some optional resident items. Three of these were on MDS2. We had the medical record number, the room number, and the last one, the lifetime occupation, were all on MDS2. A preferred name is a new one. And these are optional items, and the only real difference in those three that were on MDS2, they've all been collected together into a single place, whereas I think on 2 they were spread in different places. A1500, the PASAR overview. Happily, someone who really knows something about PASAR will be talking about it later this week, I understand, Dan Timmel. I'm just repeating what I read here, but I can tell you that PASAR is the pre-admission screening process. Applies to Medicaid units in a facility only, residents who are on Medicaid units. If a positive screen indicates that the resident has a mental illness, mental retardation, or a related condition. And it documents whether a level 2 PASAR screen determination has been issued. This item is not really calling for you to make any sort of judgments at the time you complete the item. It's just simply reporting what happened when you did the PASAR screen. Okay. All individuals who are admitted to a Medicaid nursing facility, I think that's to a Medicaid unit, must complete a level 1 PASAR. And then if the level 1 screen is positive, then you need to do a level 2 evaluation, must be performed. Individuals who are suspected of having mental illness or mental retardation or related condition can't be admitted unless they're approved through a level 2 PASAR determination. And some of these procedures vary from state to state, so you need to consult with your state Medicaid agency for the details about the procedures. The PASAR reporting, A1500, is required only on an admission assessment. If you're completing a significant change in status for an MDS resident who is on a level 2, who had a level 2 PASAR screen as positive, then you're required to notify the state mental health authority, the mental retardation or developmental disability authority. This looks pretty repetitious. I think this is the same. And the coding, you indicate a no, code of 0, if level 1 screening did not result in a referral. So in other words, they were screened, but they didn't need a referral. If a level 2 screening determined that the resident does not have a serious MI or MR condition. Or there are a few cases where PASAR screening is not required when the resident is admitted from the hospital and after an acute inpatient care, and they're receiving services for conditions that received care for in the hospital, and they certified before admission to likely require less than 30 days of nursing home care. I hope Dan talks about that in some more detail, because I don't really know much more about it than that. You code a yes if that's pretty straightforward. If the level two screening determined that the resident did have a serious condition, that mental illness or mental retardation condition. And a nine if they're not on a Medicaid certified unit. Okay, and then A1550 is conditions related to mental retardation or developmental disabilities. And we've got a skip pattern in there based upon the age of the resident. You're supposed to indicate in here whether the resident has any of the conditions indicated, whether they had an onset before the age of 22. So if the resident is 22 years of age or older, that can't change. Either they had the condition before they got to be 22 or they didn't. So if they're 22 years of age or older on the assessment date, then you only complete this item on an admission assessment when A310A is equal to 01. If they're 21 years or younger on the assessment date, then conceivably they could have, if it's a young resident, a condition may not have been there before, but now it could be there. So the item needs to be completed not just on an admission assessment, but on all the comprehensives, on annual significant change in status, or a significant correction to a prior comprehensive. And the conditions are listed here. You can see what they are. They're Down syndrome, autism, epilepsy, other organic condition related to MRDD, MRDD with no organic condition, or none of the above. Entry data. There are several items here that indicate the entry date, the type of entry, and where the resident entered from. And A2000, the discharge date, you use that obviously to indicate the date that the resident leaves the facility. Don't consider whether or not the resident's return is anticipated or not. In either case, you still would enter the discharge date. When a resident is discharged, the discharge date and the assessment reference date need to be identical to one another. And that's a fatal error. The record will be rejected if that's not true. So basically, when the resident is discharged, you're supposed to set the ARD for that discharge date and answer the MDS with reference to that discharge date. The discharge date can be later than the end of the Medicare stay date if the resident is receiving services under SNF Part A, PPS. So, for example, Part A coverage could end. They could be there for a few more days or whatever, and then they could be discharged. Don't include leaves of absence or if a resident is sent to the hospital for observation but not admitted. And the information for this can be obtained from medical admissions or transfer records. The discharge status, and I believe these are unchanged from MDS-2. We've got a number of options to indicate where the resident was discharged to, the community, another nursing home or swing bed facility, acute hospital, psychiatric hospital, inpatient rehabilitation facility, an MRDD facility, hospice, or their deceased or other. Assessment reference dates, I think it was mentioned before that, first of all, we have A2200, which is the previous assessment reference date that's required for a significant correction. This is required only on a significant correction, and it's just to indicate what the assessment reference date was of the assessment that you're correcting. And then A2300 is the assessment reference date that's just comparable to the ARD date that is on MDS-2, designates the end of the look-back period. The look-back period includes observations and events through midnight of the ARD. And anything that happens after the ARD won't be reflected on the MDS. A2400 is the Medicare stay items. And these are new items for MDS-3. They identify when a resident is receiving services under SNF PPS. And they indicate when a resident's Medicare Part A stay begins and ends. And the end date is used to determine if the resident's stay qualifies for a short stay assessment. On A2400A, you indicate whether the resident's had a Medicare-covered stay since the most recent entry. Okay, so go back to the definition of an entry is when they came into the nursing home, however they came in, and what we're asking here is whether they've had a stay since that date. So if they'd had a Medicare stay, they were discharged, came back in, but were not in a Medicare stay, you wouldn't answer this yes. It would only be if in the current stay they had some sort of a Medicare-covered stay. And A2400, if A2400 is coded yes, then you indicate the start and the end of the most recent Medicare stay. And the end date, if the stay is ongoing, then you fill those eight boxes with dashes to indicate that the stay is ongoing. And here's a few guidelines for determining or filling out the end date. You code whichever of these events occurs first, either the date the SNF benefits were exhausted, the date of the last day covered is recorded by the ABN, the Advanced Beneficiary Notice of, what's the other word? Huh? Yeah, okay. And then, I forget that abbreviation. And then, we're talking about the earliest of these dates, the date that the resident's payer source changes from Medicare A to another payer, or the date the resident was discharged from the facility. So you look at those four if they apply, and if we pick the earliest one, and that would be the date that you would put in the end date. If the resident is returning from therapeutic leave of absence or hospital observation, that's a continuation of the Medicare Part A stay. This is all in keeping with the idea that they haven't really been discharged. It's as if there's no interruption in the stay under those two conditions. And as I said before, the Medicare end date can be earlier than the discharge date. Well, we've got a couple of scenarios here. I think there's three for us to talk about. The first one, we have Mrs. G, and she began receiving services under Medicare Part A on October 14th. She was in stable condition and able to manage her medications and dressing changes, and the facility determined that she no longer qualified for Part A coverage, SNF coverage. And an ABN was issued with the last day of coverage on November 23rd. And she was discharged from the facility on November 24th. So the question is, what would you put in for the start and end dates? Well, first of all, you would say, yes, they had a, you'd start with the discharge date. You code that as November 24th. That was the date she was discharged. A2400A, did they have a Medicare coverage stay? Yes, she did. And 2400B, what's the start date? That was the October 14th date. And what's the end date? That would be the November 23rd, when the ABN date. And the second scenario, Mr. N began receiving services under Medicare Part A on December 11th. He was sent to the emergency room on December 19th at 8:30 and was not admitted to the hospital. And he returned to the facility on December 20th, the following morning, but less than 24 hours later. And then the facility completed his 14-day PPS assessment with an ARD of December 23rd. Okay, so did he have a Part A stay? Yes, he did. It started on December 11th. And even though he went out, came back in without any discharge, so he has an ongoing stay. So we'll see if we got this right. Should be a yes, and then December 11th, and then ongoing. Yes, we got that one right. Okay. Yeah, I do get one of these. That's great. Okay. Well, we'll try number three now. Mr. R began receiving services under Medicare Part A on October 15th, and he was discharged return anticipated on October 20th. Yes, he had a Medicare stay, and the stay started on the 15th, and it ended on the 20th. So that one was a pretty straightforward one. So that's it for Section A.